A Brief History of the Holy Roman Empire, Pope Boniface VIII, Part 2. Now this is going to deal with Marco Polo, the Colonnas, Year of Jubilee, and another imperial schism. So we have a lot to look at. Let's start with the Colonnas. The Colonna family dispute with Boniface VIII erupted into a full-scale revolt when they raided a papal convoy carrying treasure in May of 1297. The revolt forced Boniface to settle matters with France and concentrate on eliminating his political enemies in Rome. He, of course, excommunicated all of the Colonna, deposing two Colonna cardinals, and calling for a crusade against the Colonna family. The family responded by asking for a council to investigate the death of Celestine. Then they made a quick retreat to their fortresses and castles, well aware the papal army was ready to march. The army was led by Charles of Valois, Philip the Fair's brother. Nevertheless, Philip refused to loan £100,000 to his brother for the venture, since Boniface had been so reluctant to give money for his war against Edward. Regardless, the money wasn't needed. Their strongholds fell one by one over a year's time. At Palestrina, the two Colonna cardinals were besieged. When they realized they could not hold out against the papal army, they threw themselves on Boniface's mercy. They emerged from the city walls and prostrated themselves before the Pope. Boniface stripped them of their titles and their estates and were given to the Orsini family. The two cardinals, however, escaped to France, where they were protected in Philip's court. Of more importance to Boniface was his complete humiliation of the Colonnas by the complete destruction of their last place of refuge. Nevertheless, the two cardinals escaped the fate of their city and its remaining populace. The city was leveled, save the cathedral. 6,000 were killed on the walls of the city, and great monuments of history were destroyed. The city once held the house of Julius Caesar and a palace of a grand mosaic dedicated to the Virgin Mary. Neither were spared. The Colonna's family had been humbled by Boniface at a terrible price, but they would not disappear. Now let's get to the Germans. No sooner had the German electors elected Adolf, king of the Romans, than they found Adolf was more interested in money and power than anything else. Although he had allied himself with Edward Longshanks against Philip the Fair, he did not keep his promises. No sooner did he receive the money than he spent it at war against heirs of the former Emperor Rudolf. Moreover, he entered in negotiations with Philip the Fair, promising to ally himself against England if Philip would pay large sums of money. Soon even the King of Bohemia had abandoned him and was ready to accept Albert, the heir of Rudolf. In 1298, the electors called a council, which Adolf was ordered to appear before. He was to give an account of his actions since becoming emperor. When he failed to appear at the council, Duke Albert of Austria, member of the Habsburg family and son of the Emperor Rudolf, was proclaimed king, and Adolf was deposed on June 23, 1298. The decision did not sit well with Boniface, who declared that only a pope could depose an emperor. He backed Adolf, who finally appeared, but with an army at his side. Albert had also enough foresight to bring his own army as well. And on July 2nd, a battle raged at Golem, in which Adolf was slain. Albert was crowned king of the Romans in August of that year. Despite the victory for Albert, his recognition for emperor would not come for years. Boniface refused to recognize Albert's legitimacy, calling him a usurper. Philip, who had earlier been refused the imperial throne, would have liked for Boniface to make him emperor, but the Pope's animosity had not subsided. He refused to set up Philip as a rival, preferring another candidate, himself. Boniface did not immediately pronounce this, for he had too many enemies at present, but there seems little doubt that Boniface was already planning his own self-coronation as Holy Roman Emperor. But with the destruction of the Palestrina, the subjugation of the Colonnas, and a temporary peace with Philip, Boniface believed he was at the peak of his power, and actually he was. He declared a grand celebration called the Year of Jubilee. In his papal bull, he declared that any and all, except the Colonnas and a few enemies, would be given plenary indulgences for their pilgrimage to Rome. That's complete freedom of all their sins and punishment in purgatory. Thus, all who came to Rome for the celebration of the Jubilee would receive remission of sins without so much as needing to embark on a crusade and slay heretics. The celebration was a protracted event which brought great wealth to the city. It's said that over 200,000 pilgrims came to Rome, with 30,000 1,000 new ones daily, replacing the departing ones. According to a contemporary historian, clerks had to stand by the altar of St. Peter's day and night, gathering up offerings with a rake. The grand celebration was also a chance for Boniface to make his most arrogant of presumptions. Among the pilgrims of Rome during that year of Jubilee were envoys from the emperor designate Albert, King of the Romans. The envoys were greeted by the Pope dressed in full imperial regalia. He told the envoy simply, quote, "I am the pontiff and I am the emperor," end of quote. The message was clear and repeated, "I am the emperor." Later he held a procession through the streets of Rome dressed in the imperial garb with heralds declaring, "I am Caesar, I am the emperor." Albert made no response to this claim, and the kings of Europe seemed to largely ignore it. Boniface had no respect amongst royalty, and most looked upon his wild pretensions as the ramblings of a madman. Boniface would hold his pretension until 1303, when he was forced to recognize Albert in a futile attempt to save his own papacy against the wrath of King Philip the Fair of France. It would, in fact, be too little, too late. And finally, we have the story about Boniface and Marco Polo. Marco Polo, having recently returned from his journey in the China and the East, was in prison. There he dictated his story, which soon drew the attention of the world at large. Most people thought he was insane, initially. It might perhaps seem out of place to discuss a traveler in the history of the Holy Roman Empire, but there can be no doubt that the meeting of the Far East and the West had a profound impact on the course of history. Not only did it bring gunpowder and other technical achievements, but more importantly, it stirred the imaginations of people to a world far beyond their own. One might say the unexplored world of the East was the science fiction of the Middle Ages. One reason for the famous journey of Columbus was Marco Polo's writings that stirred the imagination. More than half a century earlier, Genghis Khan and his hordes swept out of Mongolia, conquering China, sweeping westward to the Adriatic. Upon Genghis Khan's death, the vast empire was divided amongst his heirs, at least one of whom became a convert to Christianity. Other Mongol leaders were interested in Christianity more because the Christians were the enemies of the Muslims than for the love of Christ. The Mongols had often sent emissaries to the Latin and Greeks seeking alliances. It is for this reason that the contact with the East first became important to the Holy Roman Empire. Dreams of reconquering the Holy Land were fading as the Latin states were crumbling, but the appearance of Asians in the courts of European kings and princes stirred the imagination of at least a few. Marco Polo's father had been an ambassador and traveled to the East. There he had met with the new Mongol emperor of China, Kublai Khan. In 1271, he departed for a second time, this time taking his young son Marco. There he spent nearly 25 years in China, serving in various capacities in the court of Kublai Khan. When his story was penned in 1295-1296, it was seen as a grand epic romance. It had been compared to the Arthurian legends, and indeed, this is how it was received by many who doubted its accuracy. It sparked the imagination of what lay beyond the bounds of the then-known world. When Marco Polo was asked on his deathbed to retract what he said, he replied that he'd only told half of what he saw. So, on a positive note with Boniface's reign, this is a good spot to end, because you know what's going to happen next time. Yes, we're going to have a new war with Boniface and his many enemies. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987-1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.